Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
It is show number 994. So do the math. I think we're six shows away from 1,000. So if we decided what the show is, where we're doing it, we should probably start planning that for the 1,000th show.
I think the plans are underway.
All right. If you guys think it's underway, it's underway. We got to get to the top six, and then I'll tell you now, if you want to be Lou's first caller, get on the phone now at 312-981-7200 and ask your home improvement question. Oh, you know what I got? I should tell Lou this, I suppose. But I got that wet and forget shower thing he was talking about.
Oh, isn't that great where you spray?
It's unbelievable.
And you just, it's great because normally, because you don't squeegee. A lot of
I love chemicals.
Yeah, wet and forget, you just spray it on the wall.
I'm telling you right now, the world needs more chemicals.
It's all you have to remember do, yes. The name.
Wet and forget shower.
I shouldn't have forgot it.
Yeah, just spray it on and walk away.
Right. That's all you have to do.
Yeah, and then shower it off.
That's so weird to me that you don't squeegee.
I squeegee. You're in a shower.
But you're a guy, I know.
There's enough going on in the shower. There's a lot going on in there.
I know.
There's enough going on in the shower to just take care of business. You know what I mean? Before you actually.
You mean shower?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Got a squeegee. I'm not in there to do the house, you know?
It's just so you don't. It's so the watermarks don't get on the glass.
I like watermarks.
You
I don't
do
know.
That.
It's funny.
You don't want him to fall in the shower, Andrea. Come on.
I know. Sorry. Yeah, I know there's a lot going on in
fall
there.
Fall in the shower? Who the hell are you talking to?
Hey, old man. No.
I had Bridget Gaynor in here yesterday going, it's like taking a picture with my dad. What are you talking about?
Didn't she say her dad's?
Same way. I don't want to fall in the shower.
Didn't she say dad's plural?
It's over, Steve. You've already read it.
So it wasn't just you. I think it was.
Oh, Brady and me?
Yeah, I think she was teasing.
Yeah. Well, okay, real funny.
Yeah, we're all teasing. You know that.
By the way, I do feel I have great wisdom since I've become a grandfather. And I give Abigail Grace credit for that. So I think later in the show, if we have time, I'll be handing out free advice. You know, because as a grandfather, I have great wisdom.
Advice on anything?
Anything.
Or just
anything. Okay. Mr. Lou Manfredini, Mr. I Know Everything, Mr. Lou's First Call. Okay, well, that's fine. I know stuff, too.
What's your specialty?
This is the way they used to do it around the fireplace. The
right. Cave right. The kids would sit at the floor. They'd look up at you and they'd think, wow, what great wisdom. So,
Is that what they thought?
Yeah. Well, either that or is he going to shut up soon so we can eat?
They have a good poker face.
Time now for the Top 6 at 6, sponsored by the American Weathermakers, folks.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the Top 6 at 6. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
Item number one. Kim Jong-un insulted Donald Trump in a statement, a rare statement from the bad haircut. And it brings up a question before I give you the insult. If a crazy guy insults a guy who appears to be crazy, who's crazier? I think this is one of the great questions of life.
Both. The equal amounts of craziness going on here.
Two negatives, like a positive negative.
The one that gets to explode the bomb first, I think, wins.
Don't say bomb! Kim Jong-un said to President Trump, he is, quote, mentally deranged and a U.S. dotard. Now, I'd never heard the word dotard until yesterday.
I hadn't either.
Dotard is, in short, old and senile.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And you would think that is a good insult for Trump. You can tell somebody bringing up old to me doesn't bother me.
He's got quite the vocabulary.
This word was the most looked up word yesterday on Merriam-Webster.com.
I'm not surprised a bit. And he also said, a frightened dog barks louder.
How about that? You know, the part where...
It sounds like a white guy pretending he's an Indian from a bad movie in the 50s.
The part where he called him... Confucius.
Frightened dog barks
yeah.
louder.
Yeah. The part where he called him a gangster, fond of playing with fire. Immediately when I read that, I thought, oh, Trump's going to love that. I'm a gangster.
Yeah, it'd be Trump coming out in his gangsta hat today and with his first hip-hop
pinstripe
single.
Suit.
Mr. Kim's full remarks are all in a response to Trump continuing to call him Rocket Man. He also threw in something that probably is more important than all of this, and that's the part where he said that he will pay and the U.S. will pay.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Next. By the way, if you were hoping I had some solution there, I really don't. I'm just reporting.
Wait, is there an end to this? Or?
Yeah.
You have wisdom, remember?
Remember Piers Morgan?
Yeah, I do.
Piers Morgan had a show on CNN at night for a couple of years. He was this British blowhard. And after CNN fired him, he sort of went away. Well, he's trying desperately to get back into our news cycle and our attention spans. Piers Morgan said yesterday, white people should be able to sing the N-word when it's a lyric in a rap song.
Hot take.
Jeez.
Real hot take right there.
Strong, isn't it?
Way to go, Piers.
We just repeat the rule. This is wisdom. Repeat the rule right now. If you're white, you don't say it ever. Ever, 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 ever.
Okay, to make it come full circle, didn't Piers Morgan win the Celebrity Apprentice when it was one of the first original winners?
Was he? I don't know.
Of the Celebrity Apprentice.
I don't know. I think you're right. I think he had something
seventh
to do
season,
with Trump.
Yeah, he won.
So Piers Morgan, once again, should go to the back of the line in the news cycle. Right behind the guy that does the commercial that Dean voices where the car falls apart.
Victory Auto Records?
Yeah, he should make more news. Next. The Illinois Department of Transportation approved red light cameras for already safe intersections. A Tribune investigation found a private firm teamed up with Oakbrook Terrace to install cameras at busy intersections that had the potential to generate millions of dollars per year in violations, but IDOT decided it was too safe to need cameras. The firm made political donations. Senators pushed IDOT to reconsider, and IDOT found cameras would boost crashes, but approved them anyway.
This is that busy intersection at Route 83 and 22nd that they studied by Oakbrook.
Yeah, it's run by Oakbrook Mall.
It just completely confirms the fact that these are cash cows.
John, that's where we saw the flying tire that
morning.
That's
exactly where the tire flew right through the intersection.
It's the longest light, too.
John lives in that general area. John lives at the mall.
I do.
And I picked him up one morning, bringing him to the show. Uh-huh. And we pulled up to that intersection. And I'm not making this up. I'm not making up a word of this. We pull up to the intersection, and I said, is that a tire?
Yeah.
And a tire, and I mean a big tire, like a truck tire, went flying through the intersection on its own, bounded across four lanes of traffic, over a median, through a grass strip, up into the Ditka's parking lot, and slammed against the front door like they were trying to find Coach.
Yeah. Wow. Into the third booth, ordered what?
But there was
the pork chop.
But here's
never stopped.
There was no truck carrying tires that it came off.
We didn't know nothing where it originated. Right.
There was no vehicle where it crashed down on its axle and it was missing a tire. Just a tire from nowhere.
Jeez, now, what if that would have happened later in the morning? That would have been deadly.
Oh yeah, yeah. And it was going. It was probably going a good 40 miles an hour.
It was flying. It was a flying tire. He saw it, too.
Uh-huh. I just would like to see you two going, is that a tire?
Well, that's what it was.
We laughed pretty hard. Like, what?
You could have seen, a tiny Venusian with antenna that picked up all the cable channels on his helmet. And you still wouldn't have been amazed as you saw the flying tire at that intersection.
And how about the workers trying to open the door at Ditka's that morning?
There's a tire sitting there.
Any guilt from either of you two for not jumping out of the car and trying to save humanity?
Okay, have you seen us walk?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
When the money's on the
is
line,
that what that's called?
We don't jump.
Yeah.
Next. Uber suffered a big blow when the authorities in London revoked its license to operate. How about that? Uber can't work in London. Yeah. You can't take an Uber in London. Lack of corporate responsibility in relation to a number of issues have potential public safety and security implications. And not being stated, but I spoke to our friend Paul Coit yesterday and some other folks that I know in London. They said part of the concerns of terrorism there because there's tight regulation over the black cab industry. The black cabs are the giant cabs that you see, the traditional cabs in London. And by the way, they're great. They always smell great. They're roomy. They're like
huge,
cool town cars.
They have red, too.
Yeah. And so part of the deal with Uber is if you suddenly give every citizen the right to drive around a cab with government approval, you're going to have more of these, you know, insane run into tourist situations.
Mm-hmm. I tell you,
that's part of the concern.
I'm glad that Uber, well, not in London anymore, but I'm glad that it's worldwide. When I was in Greece and took an Uber, here's their payment system. You could call them on the app, and then the guy said, do you want me to come back at a certain time, you know, in a couple hours after you've shopped around? I said, yeah, do I have to go back on the app? He said, no, you know what? He said, I'll just meet you here at a certain time, and you just pay me for both rides then.
Oh, yeah.
Like honor system. And I went, wow. Are you kidding me?
Yeah, honor except for the people at Uber. Next. The former New England Patriots tight end, whose name I can't remember. Help me. Aaron Hernandez.
Hernandez, yes.
Who was convicted of murder in 2015 and found dead in his cell in April from suicide, had a severe form of CTA, the degenerative brain disease, linked to repeated head trauma, according to medical examiners, who, after the autopsy, made that announcement yesterday. The autopsy, of course, was a while ago, but they just announced the findings yesterday. We have not seen in the past that CTE has caused people to go out and commit multiple murders and be involved in gangbanging. However, it certainly didn't help his behavior. We do know that CTE has caused people to take out violence in domestic situations in multiple cases. And obviously many have killed themselves. So while he may have been suffering under that, there was certainly significant character flaws there as well that were previous to him playing football at the highest level.
NFL needs a waiver. You play in the league, you sign this, anything that happens to you, we're not responsible. Period. End of story. Done.
Yeah, it's a business. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Next. It's World Rhino Day. Over the past 100 years, 95% of rhinos have been wiped out. And by the way, we're not talking about Republicans in name only. We're talking about actual rhinoceroses.
Yes.
Rhinoceri. Demand for rhino horn threatening their existence in at least 7,100 rhinoceri are estimated to have been killed in Africa in the last 10 years. Hug a rhinoceros if you see it today. Today is World Rhino Day. I mean, there's a lot of charities you could donate to if you so inclined.
They're very cuddly.
If you're concerned about the rhino, they're really not.
I would almost say donate, but don't hug the rhino. How's that?
Don't say that. A rhino
Sorry.
Needs a hug.
I know.
Liz next. Traffic Mary.
And traffic.
Sponsored by AmericanWeatherMakers.com.
It's Lou's First Call with Lou Manfredini and Steve Cochran. Brought to you by American Weathermakers.
American Weathermakers, we won't be comfortable until you are.
It's the time of the show for Lou's First Call.
We'd like to play, Lou, your John DeCoste song, but there's 45 minutes of introduction music already involved with you, so it's tough to get it in. You know what I'm saying? All right, you've been listening to Lou Manfredini live from the airport.
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I'm talking
to me.
Yes, are you on the air? Are you on the air?
I'm here. No, I'm. They're screening my bag, so I'm calling you from my wife's phone.
I just said we wanted to play the John DeCoste song, but you already have 45 minutes of introduction music, so it's tough to fit it in.
Got it.
Yeah.
Got it.
Hey, you and I were talking the other day about Bill Conforti, a great guy, and say hello to him for me. I reached out to him the other day, and we missed connections, but hi to Bill.
He's a good man.
Yeah.
He's a good man.
All right, so let's jump right to the first call, because I know you're trying to get on an airplane. Where are you going, by the way?
New York. Okay. We're going to see our daughter, Carmen, who's in school there. And so we're taking my wife's coming and my youngest son, Max.
All right, cool. Excellent. And we locked in. I can take this call. I'm not going to hang up on him. Jake, all good. Frank, good morning, Frank. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Great. What's your question for Lou?
Great. Quick question. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a sidewalk where it meets the garage slab or meets the driveway slab where there's some type of a separator, or it's between the sidewalks. Sometimes it's between sidewalks. It's like a fiber filler or fiber separator.
It's called an expansion joint.
Right. Well, that's come out after I've power washed my driveway, and I don't know what to fill it with because they've got this huge gap in there now.
I like grape jelly. Lou, what's your thoughts?
Grape jelly, all good? Thank you. You really want to keep that expansion in there because it does move back and forth, And okay. So you can actually go to, you're going to have to go to like a building supply supplier. Not, you probably won't find it at a hardware store, but they'll sell these 4-foot sections of that expansion joint brand new. It's this kind of vibrated tar material that if you clean out that joint really well, you should be able to slip it right back inside. And then if you put a little sand on either side to kind of hold it in place, it'll fill that gap. It'll provide the expansion that you need for the concrete, and it'll look good, too.
And great. And nothing, no type of any crack fill or anything like that needs to go in there.
No, because that once that material gets wet, it'll expand itself and kind of fill the gap. It'll puff up a little bit.
Well, I appreciate that. Thank you very much. I didn't think those things existed.
And before you hang up, April Air Wi-Fi thermostat allowing you to adjust the temperature of your home's air on your smartphone. Brought to you by American Weather Makers, home of the 60-minute man, 855-955-HVAC. If that doesn't work, Frank, I would also suggest you take Shel Silverstein's classic, Where the Sidewalk Ends, and just get several copies and jam it in there.
Thank you very much for taking my call. Have a great day and have a great trip.
Hey.
Hold the line. Yes,
hey, Steve. Steve, I have a traveling tip, because what was holding me up is the gentleman that was before me. They were searching his bag extensively, and I had to wait till they were done. You know, they were doing their job. And the reason they were searching the gentleman's bag so, precisely was he had about 6 boxes of Pop-Tarts in his bag. Literally.
For a flight to New York, he must be hungry.
Well, I said, I go, I'm going to sit next to you, because if for some reason we're delayed, they're delicious. But evidently the TSA doesn't like it. You know, I think it's got that shiny wrapper. Throws him for a loop.
So they threw out his Pop-Tarts?
No, they actually, they opened every box.
Wow.
I had pistachios confiscated once.
I was in a band called the Confiscated Pistachios. The problem we had to fold the band because nobody could say the title.
Yeah, and you guys, what they said about you guys, you were a bunch of nuts.
Oh, wow. I mean, really?
Hello? Lou?
Really?
Yeah. I loved him so much. Sorry.
That's unbelievable. This is your last appearance on the show. That's incredible.
No. It's literally Lou's last call.
Who's working for you tomorrow?
I'm on. I'm hosting my show from New York.
Oh, that's right, because you're on WABC in New York for you people that are listening.
Yeah, so I'm actually going to dial back in, and we'll be on live tomorrow.
Okay. Are you out of breath yet, walking, talking, and trying to get on a flight while you're doing the bit?
No, I'm walking, talking. It's good.
Okay.
I have my 30 minutes of exercise.
One texter, 312, we're currently using this powdered mixture that we put on and we sweep off every couple of days. We've done this 4 times. It's gotten lighter, but it hasn't gone away. Can the oil stain ever be eliminated? I assume they're talking about their deck here.
Or a driveway. There's a great product called Pour and Restore, which is kind of, it looks, I always, when I confuse people, it looks like milk of magnesia, but it's not. And you pour that on, you let it sit there, and you put it on there, and when it dries after 24 hours, you scrape it up, but there's a wet spot, and then the stain, that's as good as it's going to get.
So Pour and Restore, that would work for oil stains on the driveway too, maybe?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, and by the way, thanks for the wet and forget thing. Apparently, all of Lou's products have to rhyme, the titles.
Exactly.
Or have some sort of poetic alliteration, of course, sorts.
Right. No, I like that. It makes it more fun to use.
Right. So the wet and forget shower thing you mentioned works brilliantly.
I love it. It's really one of my faves.
Yeah, I sprayed it all over me, and I waited 3 days and hosed myself off.
That's what that is.
You know what's nice about that? If people get close to you, you have that soft vanilla scent.
I do. I actually do.
And no streaks.
There you go.
No streaking, right. And there's not a speck of mildew on him.
No, nothing. No. You should probably catch up to your wife, who by now is being hit on by tourists from other countries.
I would say I've got quite a few dirty looks, too. So.
Yeah, they love it. Not the TSA loves when you're on the phone. All right, buddy. Thanks.
I love you.
Love you back. See you later.
He's trying to make up for the pun.
Got
to
make
He's
it just a Love little it. Bit uncomfortable. Brought to you by American Weathermakers. All right. Coming up on the program here in just a couple of minutes, there's a book out called A Citizen's Guide to Impeachment. We're not getting ahead of the curve here. This is just something that will explain why it's a really bad thing to get involved with. But if we get involved with it, you ought to understand it. Okay? Stand by for that. John DeCoste is in today. We're going to play the match game coming up this morning, amongst other things, and I might give out some grandfatherly advice. I mean, who doesn't need advice from me?
I totally agree.
Wisdom. Andrea, North Korea on the big story next at 720 WGN.
The Steve Cochran Show.
What does lying under oath do to the rule of law? Do we still have a government of laws and not of men? Does the law apply to some people while the powerful are immune?
Does anyone reasonably believe that this is what the founding fathers were talking about?
Therefore, I shall resign the presidency effective at noon tomorrow.
Two-thirds of the senators present not having found him guilty of the charges contained therein. The said William Jefferson Clinton be and he hereby is acquitted of the charges in the said article.
Have you had any recollection where you've wondered if anything you have done has been something that might be worthy of criminal charges in these investigations or impeachment, as some on the left are implying?
I think it's totally ridiculous. Everybody thinks that.
Three times, right? Clinton, Andrew Johnson after Lincoln, and obviously Richard Nixon. The most prominent cases of impeachment, but I believe, if I have this right, there's 19 total federal judges, things of that nature. A Citizen's Guide to Impeachment, attorney Barbara Radnofsky's written it. Before you get yourself all upset and crazy here, this is a nonpartisan, we all should know what we're talking about here if we go down this road guide. And Barbara joins us on the phone right now. Good morning, Barbara.
Thanks very much.
Appreciate you being on. First and foremost, since you're from Houston, how are you after the storm?
Very well, thanks. The whole city is pulled together, both with our Democratic mayor and our Republican head of county. It's been wonderful. It's if tragedy can bring people together, Houston's the place.
I felt
open for business, by the way.
Yeah.
That's what our mayor says.
Come
and
on.
We're happy to have folks.
Come on down. It's an amazing recovery, considering the 50 inches of rain and that one-third of the city had serious to major flooding. But remarkable. And I was concerned because once, Irma came in, Harvey took a back seat and there wasn't a lot of follow-up. So it's good to hear that things have gotten back to normal in quotes for now.
Well, I wouldn't call it normal, but
that's why I put it in quotes.
And exactly.
So, but my best to you and everybody there. All right, let's talk about your book here, because I do believe we all should understand what road we could be headed down here. First off, if we can all agree that impeachment is a terrible thing for the country to undergo financially, security-wise, all of those things, but it's unavoidable, what do we need to understand about it?
Well, let me first fuss with you a bit on impeachment being terrible. The founding fathers viewed it as the alternative to tumults and insurrections. That's a quote from one of the great founding fathers who wrote the Constitution. They saw it as a regular, orderly process which would be used in those hopefully very rare cases, but as a regular process of negligence, incapacity, incompetence, corruption, betrayal of trust, many other. I list 25 grounds in the book. But the key, the absolute key, is when a U.S. officer presents a harm to society. And in all the research I did, the bottom line is impeachment is a regular process to be used, and with increasingly frequently in the last 10, 15, 20 years. It is, and I include judges in that,
right.
It is a regular process, and harm to society is mainstay criteria.
Yeah, well, I understand that, but my point would be if you could avoid it, obviously you would like to, and regular order doesn't seem to exist with the Congress that we've had and have now for quite some time. So I think it's important more so than ever that the public understand it, and I think your book does a good job of laying it out because the public needs to voice a voice in this process if we end up going down this road. So when you speak of the many that have occurred, it's obviously the presidents we mentioned, but federal judges, who else would be impeached?
A Secretary of War was impeached during U.S. Grant, and the first impeachment did not result in conviction because the man was dismissed from office, was a U.S. senator in the late 18th century. But it has been primarily used for U.S. officers. Investigations have included others, including cabinet officials and even vice presidents, any U.S. officer of high rank. And there is, except congressmen, thanks to that first impeachment episode. So it's a time-tested use. We've had eight impeachment convictions, half of which have occurred since 1986. And the 19 impeachments, some of them resulted in conviction and some resulted in acquittal. But Supreme Court Justice, Chief Justice Rehnquist, described impeachment as this kind of orderly process. And I must emphasize, because in all the chaos and tumults we're having right now, criminal challenges, questions of whether or not one can sue the president for his pardons or things like that, those create constitutional crises or concerns or chaos.
Barbara,
impeachment does not.
You said it's not necessarily bad, impeachment, but what about the stock markets? I know you can't predict the upswing or the downswing, but certainly would increase the volatility of the markets should the country go down this road again.
During the impeachments of the judges, which received a lot of attention in this century, the 21st century, it brought stability to the regions which had these judges that were malperforming. So, yes, one cannot predict what will happen. But in a world of chaos that we have now, regardless of what we call the cause, Congress is increasingly inefficient. The reason it posed problems in the first part of the 20th century is the rules were unstable. There were many questions about how it would proceed, and it tied up Congress. With the efficient rules, especially that were used in the Clinton impeachment process, which were praised, by the way, by Lindsey Graham as lifting a cloud from the presidency, praised by the Supreme Court, and praised, of course, by the executive branch, and by Congress, other congressmen as well, we have a better system. We have calmness because Congress, because of its efficient procedures and investigative procedures, works alongside impeachment for its other work. That couldn't happen in the days of Truman, for example. And people were very worried in the World War II and post-World War II era of having impeachments that would completely hamstring Congress. That's not the way it works and did not work during Clinton.
Stand by for just a second, if you would. The book's called A Citizen's Guide to Impeachment, Barbara Radnofsky, R-A-D-N-O-F-S-K-Y. Get two copies. You're careless, you'll lose one, and we'll have to impeach you. Barbara Radnofsky is the author. She is a Houston attorney of A Citizen's Guide to Impeachment. Unfortunately, Barbara, we're going to have to do this fairly quickly. But give me the shorthand here. Articles of impeachment would begin the process?
No, anything that a congressman wants to do by way of investigation, any House member can either file a resolution, ask for investigation, or start the process going. Then the House, when it chooses, votes, after committees usually work, on a resolution and then begins to draft articles of impeachment is the usual process.
And the articles of impeachment, is that similar to an indictment in a criminal case?
You got it exactly.
Okay. And then the articles of impeachment create what in the House that leads to a vote? Is there discussion and debate?
There is. There are no rules in the Constitution. The process has established itself so that the House does debate, and then they vote. And they vote separately on each article, and any article, if voted by a majority, then results in the officer being, quote, impeached.
Exactly
as you say, charging.
How important is the phrase high crimes and misdemeanors?
It's the only grounds ever used for impeachment because it is a more broad ground that allows for much flexibility in charging and proof.
And there's always been arguments about what it means in context. But to me, it was that broadness of basically a consent decree, for Congress to say, yes, this rises to the level this person may need to be removed.
You've summarized it rather beautifully. House impeaches, they accuse, in the words of Alexander Hamilton, and the Senate is the more deliberative body that is actually trying the case, and frankly, they act as judge. The fact that the Chief Justice presides over that trial in the Senate is just a figurehead. The Senate has the sole power under the Constitution to either acquit or convict, and very rarely, in only three instances in history, have they taken a second vote. And the second vote, after voting on each article of impeachment, the second vote is to decide whether or not the official should be forever barred from future office holding. If you are voted and convicted in the Senate, you are automatically removed from office on any of those articles of impeachment that the House presented.
The book, again, is called A Citizen's Guide to Impeachment. The Senate trial piece of this, give me you know, 30 seconds on how that works.
Constitution has no requirement of how it's done other than the voting process that the senators are the jurors, and two-thirds is required. Since the 1980s, we have a beautifully streamlined process, increasingly improved, that has made it fair but effective, and both representatives from both parties and all three branches have praised the Senate for its increasingly efficient understanding. And let me say, Lindsey Graham, who was in the House at the time and a House manager in the prosecution of Clinton, did manage that Senate prosecution with great efficiency and fairness, I think both sides would say.
I think everybody ought to read it. It's A Citizen's Guide to Impeachment, Barbara Radnofsky. And again, Houston is open for business, people. Get on a plane, get there, spend some money. Thank you, Barbara. We appreciate it, and hope people buy the book.
Thank you. Proceeds from my book are all donated, have already been donated to Harvey Relief.
God bless you. Well done by you. Thank you for that. She's a good woman. Yeah, and you're a Houston guy. It's probably good to hear.
I am. I spent 9 months living down there. I got a friend of mine, Juan Beltran, Steve, who does TV down in, I want to say McAllen now. His parents lost their home in the flooding, so I've donated a couple dollars to that. So I do have some real stories or personal stories from down there that root for people.
Sure, of course. 701, back with the news next on 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show, 720 WGN.
714, our friends at Advocate have provided another great resource for us. And that's another great doctor, Dr. Heidi Memel's here. And Andre, well, we know that there's some measure of comfort in going to a doctor for a particular condition if the doctor has gone through that process. You don't necessarily need that, obviously, but it helps if they understand the walk that you're walking, right?
Absolutely.
The journey that you're taking.
Absolutely. We all should be having a mammogram baseline at 35, but you're absolutely right. If somebody has gone through it, especially if it's your physician, it makes you feel a little bit better.
And Dr. Heidi Memel, recognized widely for her qualifications and her success as a breast surgeon, you were diagnosed with breast cancer when?
Good morning.
Welcome to the show. There's a kind of a cold introduction. Didn't mean that to be
good
the case.
Morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, appreciate you being here.
So I was diagnosed over 12 years ago. I was already just starting my fellowship for breast surgery. I'd already finished my training as a general surgeon and started my fellowship for breast cancer surgery. And
that's the kind of irony you don't need.
Exactly. Yeah. But it really does give some perspective to the whole situation of what my patients are going through.
Where's the line for you between science and humanity? Where as a scientist, you're curious and you're thinking, well, this is going to be very educational and interesting going through this, and the humanity of, holy crap, am I scared?
Yeah. It's all blended together. You know, every time we think about something new coming out, some new development, some new research, we've always got those patients in the back of our minds.
You look fabulous. You feel great.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay. And for people who have gone through the process as well, and they go day to day, month to month, year to year, I assume they're the best folks to advocate for others, right? Because you know what you're talking about.
Absolutely.
All right. So at Advocate Health, and the website advocatehealth.com/breast health. What do we find when we go there? A lot of important resources, I would assume.
So there are a lot of great resources. Number one is screening options. It talks a little bit about what are the screening options to diagnose breast cancer early. When breast cancer is diagnosed early, it is absolutely curable. So it talks about getting your screening mammogram starting at 40, yearly thereafter. We've got some of the latest technology at Advocate. We've got all the Advocate sites are equipped with 3D mammograms. It's called 3D tomosynthesis. And it's just a step above the regular 2D digital imaging. It can detect.
So you can find things that 2D doesn't.
Absolutely. Right. It looks at the breast in three dimensions. It helps reduce the callback rate for screening mammograms, which is so anxiety provoking for women when they get called back. It also helps in the detection, especially in women with more dense breast tissue. So it's a great new technology. Advocate has it at all its sites.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you. So more often than not, and maybe it's just we hear about it more, there are more callbacks. And initially you panic and then start asking the tech, oh, my gosh, what did you see? Obviously, mm-hmm. they can't say anything. But are we seeing more callbacks for that reason? Is just that, you know, you want to make sure and that the density of the tissue, maybe that you can't read it. You need another set of eyes on it?
So oftentimes, you're right, it's the density of the breast tissue that's overlapping and can look like a little spot. It can look like a little breast cancer. And we need more images to kind of press that out or to do an ultrasound. The 3D mammogram helps eliminate that overlapping breast tissue when it can look like a breast cancer. So it helps eliminate those false positives.
If you do get a callback, should you ask for an MRI? I know someone who went through breast cancer. She's a survivor, one of our coworkers, and said, ask for the MRI. Is it too soon if you get a callback?
So, yeah, that may be too soon. Everybody has a different kind of situation and different mammogram. But typically when we bring somebody back for a callback, it's usually an additional mammogram with spot views on an area. And it can also be combined with an ultrasound. An ultrasound does a great job of looking through that dense breast tissue and telling if something is a cyst and that's benign and then we send you home, or if it's something suspicious and then we recommend a biopsy.
We'll answer some of your questions here, too, if you'd like. Texters 312-981-7200 if you can hang around for a second. I'm sure you can. You got up this early. Why would you leave now?
Exactly.
It's advocatehealth.com/breasthealth. And Mark Carman went through something this week, which he's willing to talk about, and we appreciate that. And we don't talk about this when it comes to Breast Cancer Awareness Month or anything else, and that men need to do self-exams as well and need regular checks, and men are regularly diagnosed. We need to consider that going forward as well. I'd also recommend that you look at advocategiving.org, the charitable foundation side of Advocate Health. They do some amazing things there, and they find a lot of ways to pay for stuff, which isn't a budget line item through your generosity. Dr. Heidi Memel is here. Doc, what is your actual title?
I'm one of the co-medical directors at the Caldwell Breast Center at Advocate Lutheran General and a breast surgeon.
Let me get Andrea, Mary, and Sandberg in here if any of you have questions, because, again, to me, it's always tedious to hear grown men talking about women's health.
I want to know if there will ever be a less invasive or a less painful procedure to get a mammogram.
For early detection of breast cancers, mammogram right now is a gold standard, but eventually there will be. MRIs right now are cumbersome, they're time-consuming, they require an IV. That's not our gold standard right now. But eventually, they're looking at things like even a blood test to detect if they're circulating cancer cells.
And how far down the road?
I mean, that's a ways down the road, but it's under investigation right now.
So well, it's encouraging.
We're making advancements every day in the field.
Mary Vandeveld, question for the doctor?
Years ago, I had to go back for more images to be done. And, you know, that made me really nervous. And I went back and I had them done. I believe I actually had ultrasound as well. But I have never had to go back again. That kind of makes me a little more nervous. Should I be more nervous about that? Or should I feel like research has done, you know, there's so many new, testing out there that I should feel better about that?
Yeah, absolutely. If you get called back one time and they're able to see what their concern was with an ultrasound or with additional views, you can be pretty well assured. If there is something there, they'll often have you come back for a short-term follow-up, a six-month follow-up, just to check and make sure things aren't changing. But our mammograms, again, they continue to advance. Our 3D technology is much better than our old imaging.
Sandberg.
So my mom is a 13-year stage 3 breast cancer survivor, and she did not have the kind that was the genetic whatever, but we're still considered, my sister and I, because she, the age at which she was diagnosed was young enough to put us in a higher risk or whatever, and I never understand how they determine that when they know for sure she did the BRCA testing and she isn't a carrier and we don't have that. Is it just because, are we more prone just because she got it, even though it's not the genetic kind?
Yeah. That's a great question. We just, over years and years of research and looking at large populations, we see that we look at some of the things that increase a woman's risk for developing breast cancer. And one of the things that we've seen over years is having a first-degree relative diagnosed with breast cancer, and especially at a young age, even if they aren't carriers of a mutation. Our genetic testing has improved over the years. We're testing for more gene mutations than just the BRCA1 and 2 now. So we often try to identify women who are coming through for a screening mammogram who might have a family history or who are diagnosed with breast cancer in an early age, offer them genetic testing. And then for women who do have a family history, we talk about increased options for screening, not only a mammogram once a year, beginning about 10 years earlier than the youngest relative was diagnosed, but if somebody has a first-degree relative and very dense breast tissue, a mammogram might not be your only option. You might be able to do a screening ultrasound once a year in addition to mammogram.
That's what my doctor has. Every six months I do the screening and then the mammogram. Like, we do a rotation, and that's been happening since I was 36 just because of the age of my mom. So
that's a great option for women who are at increased risk in detecting something early.
So stay ahead of it, right?
Absolutely.
Stay ahead of it. As much as possible, because you want to make sure that you are ahead of it in the picture. Mark Carman's here. Mark is in for Dave Ennett. You had a concern that you had a lump of sorts yourself, or what caused you to get checked?
I had a little tissue thing. I might be a tad bit of a hypochondriac. Right, hypochondriac. Thanks, yeah, Steve.
Sure.
Every now and then. And so I thought it was nothing. Talked to the doctor, though. They said, well, why don't you go get yourself a mammogram?
Right.
So I was in there. It was embarrassing, Heidi, I have to say, but I just want to let men know that... hey, you can do it too.
I bet it's hard. Well, maybe not. I was going to say, I bet it's harder to get men to come in for that test.
Oh, absolutely. And if somebody detects a lump, if a man detects a lump, you tend to, I'm sure, kind of brush it off and say, it can't happen to me. But absolutely, men do develop breast cancer. It's far less likely than women, but it is an absolute...
My father-in-law had it.
Yeah, it's absolutely important to come in, get an ultrasound, get a mammogram, and get that little lump checked out.
And fortunately, you're all good?
I'm good, and I've experienced the test, so it was very much eye-opening. I was, wow, this is intense, so I just want to lend my voice to the... I get what you're talking about, the uncomfort over there, Andrea.
Yeah, right?
Texter looking for some clarification here. Asking your guest why not an ultrasound rather than a mammogram if the ultrasound is more definitive and way less painful.
So that's a great question. Mammograms have been shown to be the best screening method overall. They detect things early, and they can actually detect things earlier than an ultrasound might. An ultrasound is a very good test to look at one spot area. It's also become now a good screening tool for detecting lumps, like a small invasive cancer. An ultrasound isn't the best option for detecting something very, very early when it's non-invasive.
So the order of events would be ultrasound mammogram or mammogram ultrasound?
Usually a screening mammogram. That's been shown to be across the board for everybody. A screening ultrasound can be used for women who are at very high risk because of a family history and who have dense breast tissue.
Other texter says, are there more cases of breast cancer than 30 years ago, or are we just hearing about more?
That's a great question. The incidence is just, it hasn't varied very much, maybe slightly higher. The treatment rate, the death rate is lower.
Okay.
So we're making advancements. We aren't making as many advancements as we like for all of the funding put into this, though. So we think about what can we really do? One of the options is not only detecting earlier, but helping women reduce their risk over time, helping them identify when they're high risk, options for risk reduction. We've got some great medications for high-risk women that can reduce their risk, finding out if they're a mutation carrier, and then basic healthy lifestyle choices.
Is that the BRCA mutation you guys are speaking of?
Right, the BRCA 1 and 2. We've got panel tests now that test for even more than just the BRCA mutation.
But just say you test positive for BRCA and you have the gene, it's the having the gene, right? That doesn't necessarily mean that you will get full-blown cancer, correct?
If you carry a BRCA mutation, your chances of developing breast cancer in your lifetime are between about 60 to 80%. So it's quite high.
Another texter, 708, my 25-year-old daughter does have the BRCA mutation. When should she have her first mammogram? She's 25 now.
So young women who are diagnosed with a BRCA mutation should begin typically screening MRIs around 25 and then screening mammograms around the age of 30.
Look, it's an important topic. We're going to hear an awful lot about it during the month of October, obviously, but we wanted to get ahead of it too here. And we appreciate you as a resource. Congratulations on your great health. And Mark, I salute you for getting in and getting a test, man.
Thanks,
and
Steve.
Talking about it as well.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Because we need more people who are willing to step up and say, yeah, this is the way to go. You got to listen to your body. You do. Men, I would say men are worse patients. I'm not sure. Yeah, women are so busy taking care of the rest of the world. You guys are really bad at taking care of yourselves sometimes. And I know a lot of doctors, and so do you, who are worse patients than Dr. Memel being the exception than doctors. Women. The last people to go in and get checked. So get checked yourselves, docs listening now.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And women, come in for your screening mammogram. Advocate has same-day mammograms. You can call up and get your mammogram that day and even results within about 24 hours.
Yeah. There's no upside to waiting. What's the worst you're going to find out? That it was nothing. Right?
Right.
AdvocateHealth.com/breast health and AdvocateGiving.org. We hope you look at both. Doctor, thank you.
Thanks so much for having me here.
An animal!
Dan Hampton anchors a young Bears defense.
An animal!
It's time for Dan Hampton.
We are very, very lucky, Mark Carmen.
We are.
To have Dan Hampton, the Hall of Famer, on our team.
99, baby.
And on Sunday, you and the three Bears are on when?
We go on a noon kickoff, 3 to 6, 3 hours of Bears postgame show. Hampo has been bringing, not that he always doesn't bring it, but it's been the A++ game early season. It's been a lot of fun.
Now, your job is twofold. One is you have to host the show, but secondarily, you have to make sure the food is delivered and delivered on time. I think we know which of those two jobs is more important.
No question. Mr. Submarine's got to be there. Get a delicious, tasty treat at a Mr. Submarine.
All right, let me go to Hamp now. How is he doing so far? How's Carm doing?
So far, so good. He and Fox are both a little bad on the clock management. So far, so good.
All right, well, listen, here's who you don't want on your schedule this weekend, the Pittsburgh Steelers. But we got him, so now we got to play him. And how are you feeling?
There's a lot of facets to this game. You know, obviously, the horror movie that Mike Glennon threw up last week, it's hard to believe that the Steeler defense is really overly concerned about the Bears' offense. Seeing how we couldn't run, we couldn't throw, we couldn't throw it to our guys. And so, all that being said, you know, the Bears have always seemed to rebound. They know that it's been a long time since the Bears have won a game in September. They know it's been a long time since, they've done some good things at home to give the faithful something to cheer for. But the good news is, for whatever reason, the Steelers always seem to play down when they play, one of the lower echelon teams. And I think we qualified 0-2. So, you know, this could be a dogfight, a close game. And the theory with this group is, you know, they're going to scratch and claw, try to do what they can on defense to limit the Steeler offense. But, stay in it and see what happens. But the critical mistakes that Mike Glennon made last week, and I've heard a few media people kind of point it out, but it was evident to me that he was guessing. He basically, when he would come to the line of scrimmage, you're supposed to read. And, you know, John Fox had said something during the week like, oh, he's the kind of guy that could win the play before the ball snapped. Well, he lost the game before the ball was snapped because he predetermined where he was going to go and threw it no matter what and threw it into, you know, horrible situations where it was a pick six and an interception down inside our 30. So the bottom line is Mike Glennon cannot turn it over. Now, how much will they allow him? And there's a deal. If you're playing, of course, like Seven Bridges and there's a creek everywhere you look, you're not going to be hitting driver. You're going to be hitting 3-iron off the tee.
You got to make choices.
Let's see what Mike Glennon hits off the tee in this game. And I don't think we're going to see him pull out the driver much.
So you mentioned the horror movie. I get Carmen here on this, but you mentioned the horror movie. Have we traced the, you know, they always trace the call in a horror movie. We trace the call. He's in the huddle. Is that the scene? That's probably it. Yeah. Carm, say hi to him.
Hampo, good to hear you as always. I'm wondering if you think at this point, Hamp, that Bears fans should be rooting for another Glennon disaster so we can move along to Mitchell Trubisky.
Well, there's no question that Mike Glennon had projectile dysfunction last week. And it won't take much
by the way, if it happens for more than 3 hours, call your doctor.
And it won't take much before, hey, he's already lost the fans. And I'm sorry, we saw it during the preseason. You know, John Fox can be convinced about two drives in Tennessee in a preseason game. Okay, well, that's just prerogative. You know, the rest of us, we saw what we saw, and it's time to get on with it. You know, it's time you say, okay, it's time to get on with it. Well, this is, I hate to say a waste of time, because why would you invest all this time in developing this quarterback, his timing, his reach, his finesse, his connection with the – when ultimately you want it to be with another guy that's standing there on the sideline that is more mobile, that's more conducive to being effective in this offense right now. Look, Cody White here should have been given a medal last week. He started at center, went to left guard, and then due to injury had to go to right guard. I don't know if I've ever seen a guy have to play three different positions in one ball game. But all those things being said, yeah, Cal Long hopefully will come back this week. Hopefully we'll stabilize the offense. But all those things, it contributes to the fact that we're not going to be really, really good in pass protection. So you want a quarterback that can get away from people, not a guy that, you know, puts down roots as a 6'7" statue. And so all these things, you know, and okay, it's easy to say, oh, well, poor Mike Glennon. Well, poor Mike Glennon's got $18.5 million guaranteed. We'll worry about him some other day. The bottom line is we are thinking, how can we get this team on a competitive track where now not only we can be competitive, but we have a chance to win. I think Trubisky gives us the best chance to win. The fans, the Bear fans are not stupid. They see it. They smell it. It won't be long.
Yeah, and by the way, and Carms, I'll get you back in here, but Mike Glennon controls his own outcome here. Because even if he has no support and he ends up on his butt several times during this game, there are guys that have played great games in the NFL who have been sacked 8 or 10 times. There are guys that still can find a way to move a team in the worst possible situations. You can't look scared. You can't look like you're improvising at Second City. He can have a great showing Sunday and extend his life as the number one guy. It's up to him. So there's no reason to feel sorry for him, Carms.
Yeah, it's all true. He's getting a golden opportunity here, and if he's not going to be the Bears' long-term quarterback, but he could be for somebody else if he plays well, right, Hamp?
Well, and I guess that's the overarching theory. We'll sign him. He'll look really good because we're a great team. We're smart coaches. And then we'll trade him for number two or three, and then we'll put the kid in next year, and he'll take us to the playoffs. All I can tell you is, it seems like the John Fox era has manufactured more and more questions, more and more problems. They pop up like stink bugs. This time of year, I get a bunch of stink bugs at my house. Everywhere I look, on the window, in the door frame, they're like the questions and problems on this Bear team. Never any answers, nothing solved. There's always a myriad of problems and questions. So, you know, at some point, the reason Ryan Pace moved up to get this kid, he felt like he was the deliverer. And sooner or later, it's going to be, you know, it's going to be in his lap. But, you know, Steve, you make a great point. If Glennon wants to keep his job, throw 3 or 4 touchdown passes, 0 interceptions, let's win a game, and all these questions go away. You and I know that's a little bit harder to do than just saying it.
Let's talk about what you majored in Arkansas defense. Le'Veon Bell is one of the best backs in the game. Antonio Brown is one of the best receivers in the game. It seems that when teams put 8 in the box, Le'Veon Bell doesn't even touch the football. That may be the only way to contain him, but I don't know that anybody's figured out a way to contain Antonio Brown. So who's going to stop these two?
Well, you know, Prince Amukamara should be back, but he's got a bad ankle. He's just one play away from, you know, turning it again. So we're hopefully going to get him back. Antonio Brown is, you know, he's not as big and physical as a lot of guys like Julio and that bunch, but he's a scoring machine. He can fly. Martavis Bryant, he can fly. Le'Veon Bell is I don't know what's going on with him. You know, he disappeared. He pulled a muscle in the playoff game. I think it really irritated Roethlisberger that, you know, it wasn't an all-hands-on-deck attitude to try to beat the Patriots and go to the Super Bowl. And that's why, you know, Ben was saying, oh, I'm going to retire. You know, anyway, so I think this team does have this Pittsburgh team, I think they have a sense of urgency this year. They know that the window is you know, it's right there. 2 years, 5 years from now, you may not have any of these guys. So I think, you know, they're a pretty good team. And their defense has gotten better. Last year, they were garden variety. This year, they're number three in the league in defense right now. And they're getting better. They got a young secondary that is going to cause us some problems. But you're exactly right. The bottom line is you can't let them be two-dimensional. We got to stop the run. Everybody wants to run. Everybody wants to pound you. And then, you know, play action. That's how you protect your quarterback. Well, we can't let them do it. So, you know, we go into the season saying our front seven is the strength and our, you know, the rock we live on. Well, let's see if we can get this offense one-dimensional by stopping Bell early. And then, hey, putting Roethlisberger in, you know, must-throw situations and, you know, come after him. Pound him a little bit.
Last word for Carms, and we got to pick the scores.
Hamp, Kyle Long's going to be back this week, and you're a guy who, of course, dealt with a ton of injuries in your career. Is it reasonable to expect it's going to be the same Kyle Long when he had that serious of an ankle injury? I know that your problems were more with the knee, but what do you think?
Well, we don't know. And here's the one thing. You had 7 months, 8 months to get ready, and now here we are almost October. Something is fishy. Something doesn't make sense. Let's hope he does. He's our best offensive lineman. And, you know, he was the face of the team a year, 2 years ago. Let's hope he continues to be that type of player. But, you know, I got to tell you, a lot of folks, J.J. Watt don't look the same to me. So, you know, sometimes players can't come back. But Kyle Long is the guy we need to come back. So we'll find out.
Bears on Sunday would love to steal a win. I wish I had the confidence to predict it, but I've got this as a final. Steelers over the Bears, 21-9. Hamp?
27-12, Steelers. And, you know, again, if we make them fight, you know, if this thing's close and we fight them into the third quarter, things all change. But I got to tell you, the Steelers, they know what's going on. They're going to try to go up top early. Try to get a cushion. Hopefully we can stay with
them. All right, Carm, score for Sunday.
I got the Bears winning. I've picked them every week, and I'm just going to continue with that, Steve. 24-23, Bears.
Well, Cinderella, that's great. Keep clicking your heels till you get one. Hey, we appreciate that.
I'm staying consistent. 7.5-point underdog, no worries.
All right, there you go. And you guys again are on win, Carm.
3:00 Sunday afternoon. Be there.
The best coverage, period. Period. And I mean that in a Sean Spicer way. No, wait, I mean it in a non-Sean Spicer way. I forget. Hamp, have a great weekend. Thanks, buddy.
Go Bears. Here we go.
All right. Brought to you by ChevyDriveChicago.com. Mary.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than what I should.
Dean Richards joins us live from Channel 9, and we have a special guest in the studio, Dean, and I think you have a mutual friend.
We do.
Let me say hi to Dylan Loren here, and Dylan, the ongoing controversy, Lauren.
Lauren.
Lauren!
I knew it! But you can say it however you want. You get a pass.
I blame your father. I do. Wait, because your father allowed this mispronunciation to go on for years.
But during Fashion Week, it's Lorraine. Doesn't it not become?
Yeah, you know, people think because it's like fancy fashion and Sophia Lorraine that it could be
Steve
that.
Fancy.
But, you know, it's cool with me.
No, that's true. Samber?
Andrea just said, I know it, but she just said on the air a few minutes ago, I pronounce it both ways.
I do, because
but then
what,
you said, I know it in celebration, but you say both.
This is part of your getting along thing.
I knew. Both are good.
All right, so
and
Dean, who's
all the time we have? Thanks very much for joining us. I'm afraid.
Dean, who's your mutual friend?
Our mutual friend is Mary Fortuna.
Mary Fortuna.
Sure. Hi, Mary.
From New York. Yeah, she's a very close friend of mine, and she's spoken glowingly of you. In fact, she worked for you at the candy shop for a while, right?
Yeah, she did an amazing job as our personal shopper for all our corporate gifts and, you know, birthday, wedding favors. She was so great, and she's been a great friend to the company and to my family.
Yeah,
so.
from New York. They're friends from New York, and so.
Dean knows everyone, and I mean literally everyone. You're doing the Sweet Adoption event again. This
yes.
is tomorrow night, so explain what happens.
So tomorrow from 12 to 4 in front of the Dillon's Candy Bar location on Michigan Avenue, right next to you guys, we are going to have Paws dogs come. There's about 25 to 40 dogs. We're still figuring it out. All of these dogs need homes desperately, especially with all these hurricanes coming through. They take in more dogs. So they need to get them out to mm-hmm. homes. And so from 12 to 4 tomorrow, we'll have all these dogs that especially need attention more than anything. So if you're not in the spirit of adopting and you can't just come and play with them to get them out of the shelters and on the streets to, like, interact with people, that, you know, that's the highlight for them. But, yes, I have my own rescue dog from a shelter, and she is part of our family. And you see how much they appreciate having a home. So I am a big advocate of adopting an animal.
So what do people need to do? Just come by?
Yeah, they come by to Dillon's Candy Bar, and they look at all the dogs available. They can interact. They can meet all of the Paws volunteers who can tell you anything about the dog. They've all been spayed, neutered.
The volunteers?
Trained. There's volunteers.
They've been spayed and neutered?
No, the dogs have. Okay. They're, what's so amazing is you can literally take your dog home right from there.
That's pretty cool.
As long as you pass the test that you will make a good parent to the dog. They are very key on making sure they get good homes. It's an amazing organization.
Yeah, it really is. It really is. We know it well, and they are wonderful people. And as you said, the need after this series of natural disasters has never been higher. So it's Adopt a Sweetie, the adoption event at Dillon's Candy Bar. It's tomorrow night starting at what time?
It's 12 to 4.
Oh, 12 to 4 in the afternoon?
Yeah, it's in the afternoon.
We're not starting tomorrow. At midnight. It's 12
no,
to 4 in the afternoon.
No. And so those dogs will be there. And if you want more information, you can go on dillonscandybar.com or on Paws Chicago website for adoption instructions.
Good for you.
Yeah, but the dogs, literally, they are so cute. I've got a sneak peek of them. And, I mean, if I could take you know, all 25, you know, more.
That's the hard
home,
part, not taking them home.
I know. But last year we had such success. I mean, literally all the dogs went home. And then the ones that people are still curious about, they went to Paws Shelter after and then took them home. And everyone who I met at the event sent me pictures of the dog in their house. And it was very fulfilling.
Funny,
yeah.
That's how I feel when I walk into Dillon's. I just want it all. I want the chocolate. I want the caramel.
It's funny, right? Because dogs love chocolate, but they can't eat chocolate. But any of the dogs disguise themselves as hairy tourists to try to pick up a candy bar?
The dogs try to get in the store. We do have dog treats that we're doing with our foundation. And
nice.
We have, we're selling candy that 10% goes to Dillon's Candy Barn to help the animals.
And that's all day?
Yeah, that's all day, and then there's free ice cream in our cafe. So, you know, if you come,
look at you.
Yeah, it's all to get
look
people to
you,
come
Dillon,
to
Lauren.
See the animals.
You know, Dean, I was telling Dillon off the air. This is the only store in Michigan Avenue, as you know, it's a little busy. This is the only store on Michigan Avenue, Dean, that regularly needs a fire marshal to go. It's full. No more people.
It's pretty busy over there. It is. It's yes. always busy there.
You're always backing people out the door.
Well, you know, we have candy security. You know,
uh-huh. You know, it's cool, though, when you go in and you see Dillon on a ladder. Remember the first time I ever saw her? She's on a ladder, like, fixing the lollipop tree.
Hey, it's expenses, baby.
Dillon's
it's expenses. Got to keep the numbers down.
I'm very particular to how the candy is curated, how the store looks. I want to be a happy place for people, and I want to look like art. So,
I would love if she had Oompa Loompas working there.
We have Oompa Loompas. They'll be there at the event tomorrow with with the dogs.
Oh, wow.
So, just trying to get more people to see them.
There you go.
Like Willy Wonka. Your wishes will come true.
I ask you this whenever you're in. What's your favorite candy?
You know, I'm really into marshmallows lately. When they're
That's like, incorrect. What are you really into?
No, I'm really into marshmallows. They're candy. They're in the candy food group. Yeah. I also like red Swedish fish, red raspberries.
But am I remembering this right? You're not a chocolate chick.
You know, I'm not a chocolate chick. However, I like Cadbury cream eggs. I have a chocolate chips out of a chocolate chip cookie.
But the deal is you have to taste everything, don't you?
I taste everything. I you know, the big candy shows are here in Chicago.
How are you not 600 pounds?
Because I run. In fact, I love coming to Chicago and running.
Oh, you run on the lake.
Here. Oh, my God. Yeah. Amazing. Yes.
Wow.
Yes. It's everything in moderation. So that's why
I'm not a big fan of moderation.
You put a trail of chocolates along the lakeshore, Steve, and I will also start running.
Oh my God!
I'm trying to get a golf cart that has a trail of Dylan's chocolate behind it. I'll chase it for miles. It is. It's high. It's the highest quality. You've got a great little cafe. I guess would be the right word for it.
Yeah, with candy cocktails for happy hour. Are you guys welcome to come back?
I've been to one of those too. They're great.
Yeah, really good drinks. Yeah, I mean, like we definitely have some fun. You know, chocolate martinis and Pop Rocks explosion and ice cream. You know, infused with alcohol.
And didn't miss
adults.
A trick, man. You got the nostalgia section.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
And then the classics. What's the number one seller?
Sour watermelon.
No,
gummies.
Cellar, number
that
one
is,
cellar.
That is.
Sour that's your number watermelon. One cellar. Those? I thought it was the number one sour.
Cellar. No, that's one of them. I think the Dylan's Candy Bar branded products does very well. People want to take home a piece of that. Or the Chicago candies that are sort of souvenirs also do well.
I like how you mix the flavors too. Like the candy bars, you do the bacon and the maple flavor. I mean, there's really cool concoctions that you made with the candy bars.
Thank you. Yeah, there's all new. You know, flavors. We're coming out with bubblegum chocolate and, you know, some other fun, crazy things. But it really, it changes all the time. So right now we're doing Care Bear's 75th anniversary. So it's all about caring and sharing. And there's some really fun, nostalgic candy bars with the Care Bear.
Thank God you don't live in the real world.
Yes. It's always a new day there.
And so. Dean, you travel all over the country. Dylan, where are the locations so Dean can go in and drop your name and get anything at the regular price?
I've been to the New York one.
Many
times.
So we're coming upon our Sweet 16. New York flagship on 60th and 3rd is really been around 16 years. We opened a downtown Union Square, very hip-hop looking, cool Dylan's Candy Bar location in New York. And then we have L.A., Miami, Chicago, of course. The airports and a few actually apt here in Chicago is a big new location. Neiman Marcus.
We love those guys.
Yeah, it's very cool. It's fun to shop for electronics and products and then get some candy.
Absolutely.
And DylansKennyBar.com, obviously, if you can.
Are you
get to
sure
a
you're not a secret agent? You seem to know too much.
I am an Oompa Loompa in disguise.
Hey, I bet if you sent Dylan to North Korea, there would be no problem.
Oh my God.
I'm telling you right now.
We'd all be happy.
You could fly in, sit down with Kim Jong-un, give him all the Dylan's candy. Suddenly, he'd be a nice guy.
You know, they need some sweetness over there.
Doubt about it. I know you got to run. I appreciate the extra time. But again, let's plug tomorrow night. For people that want more information, what do they do?
So tomorrow, come 12 to 4, Dylan's Candy
I keep saying
Bar.
Tomorrow night, tomorrow afternoon.
Yes, it's tomorrow afternoon. And it's important to show up because it's going to be hot, but the dogs are out there waiting to get a home. So it's so important to tell you all your friends, family, want a new family member. 12 to 4 Dylan's Candy Bar on Michigan Avenue. Come play with the dogs and hopefully bring somebody home.
Great to see you as always.
Thank
you
so much.
You're always welcome here. Lots of cover here. Calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment what's this, Bill Murray doing a show at Symphony Center?
He is going to be doing a show with, Steve, I know one of your favorite artists, if I'm not mistaken. You are regional
Slim Whitman
fan club president of German cellist Jan Vogler.
Oh, I love the Vogue. We call him the Vogues.
The Vogester.
Yeah, the Vogester.
The Vogester. Bill Murray has been doing a series of shows with Jan Vogler and classical artists and performers, where he reads poetry and prose and sings a little bit, does some classic songs, some Gershwin and so forth. It's kind of a cool concept. And tickets, it's going to be at the Symphony Center October 10th.
Well, it's right around the corner then.
Yeah, and tickets are on sale right now.
Despacito. This was the biggest selling, the biggest viewed YouTube clip in music in, well, forever.
For this summer.
For the summer.
Yeah.
That's my point, for the summer.
Not in the history of all time, but
no.
For this summer.
No, because all time goes back to like 2005.
That's right. Johann Sebastian Bach. Would have something to say about that.
Bach killed
it on YouTube.
He
also did a killer version of Despacito, by the way. A lot of people don't remember that. But Daddy Yankee, who is the main performer behind the song, is at the Aragon Theater.
Is that really the name, Daddy Yankee?
Yeah, that's his
name. Or is that
name.
Something a woman called you once?
No, that's...
My Daddy Yankee.
That's the name when he was a little baby Yankee in the hospital many years ago. His mom... Mommy Yankee said, let's call him Daddy. Let's name him Daddy.
It's a very odd story.
He's at the Aragon tonight and Uptown tonight, and he tweeted out this morning that he wants his fans to bring bottles of water and repellent and diapers and first aid kits and flashlights and anything that you think those in Mexico or Puerto Rico might be in need of right now, and he will have it all shipped to the correct place. He's doing a whole series of concerts, but... in Chicago tonight, and he's asking his fans all over the country to help out. I think that's pretty cool.
I agree. In a series of weeks, we've had some real cinematic crap come down the pipeline in late summer and early fall.
Very true.
But several interesting-looking movies this weekend. What is Stronger?
Best of the Bunch is what Stronger is. It's Jake Gyllenhaal's new movie where he plays this guy named Jeff Bauman, who is a very lovable but kind of dopey everyday guy in Boston, messes up everything that he does, including his relationship with his girlfriend. And he wants to prove to his girlfriend that he is really there for her. She's running the Boston Marathon back in 2013. So it's a true story. So he shows up at the finish line with a big sign for his girlfriend to show, I'm there for you. And when the two
I'm not a loser, I'm wicked smart.
Wicked smart. That's exactly the kind of guy that he was, as they set up in the movie. But he was literally right next to where the bombers set those knapsacks. When the two bombs went off, Jeff Bauman lost both of his legs. He did survive, but this movie, Jake Gyllenhaal plays Jeff Bauman in the movie beautifully, by the way, tells the story of... what it's like trying to learn to live your life as a double amputee, emotionally struggling with, you know, the way his family and friends now treat him, how the city of Boston is treating him like a hero, although he does not feel one bit like a hero. He said, I was just standing there. I did nothing. So there are some inner and outer conflicts that this movie goes over. It's an amazing, touching a beautiful story. Bring some Kleenex. This one is a tearjerker. Great supporting performances. Miranda Richardson plays his mom. Tatiana Maslanya is his girlfriend in the movie. They are both also great. I'd be shocked if Gyllenhaal did not get an Oscar nomination for this. Dean's List B+ for that one.
It's a story we didn't know. Battle of the Sexes is probably your big star movie of the weekend, right?
Probably. It's Billie Jean King and Bobby Riggs is... famous gender tennis match that became one of the first media circuses of all time 44 years ago. Steve Carell and Oscar winner Emma Stone play them beautifully. Carell really capturing the cartoon that was Bobby Riggs. But what really makes this movie, the heart of this movie, is Emma Stone as Billie Jean King, as an athlete on the court, in the press, continuously fighting for women's rights, women's lib, as it was called back then. But also you see the personal turmoil that Billie Jean King was going through, who was married at the time to a man, and she begins to question her sexual orientation. It's a powerful movie. It's funny. It's very nostalgic. If you remember the real Battle of the Sexes, there's lots of actual archival footage. And anytime I can see Howard Cosell's toupee that many times in one movie, I'm a happy man. I gave this one a B+ also.
I feel like I remember the opening shot. It was Cosell at the Astrodome, you know, screaming about this night, Bobby Riggs, you know, just out of his mind.
A lot of that. There's a lot of that archival footage. And I was laughing out loud at Howard Cosell and some of the other commentators saying things like, if only Billie Jean King would grow out her hair and get rid of those glasses, she'd be a much more attractive dame.
Yep, and you could get away with it then, couldn't you?
Right. Right. Yep.
Not that it was right then. It's wrong then. It's wrong now.
There's this movie, Kingsman, The Golden Circle. Did you see the original?
I did. Kingsman, I did. And I got to be honest with you. I thought it was a terrifically entertaining movie with excessive violence.
Yep.
But an absolutely ridiculous ending they didn't need. And by ending, I mean literally almost the last scene in the movie, which involved the specifics of a sexual encounter and positioning and geography. I mean, it was just,
right.
What? What? Why does that need to be in the movie? And so I walk out of the theater going, what was that? Instead of that was a great ride.
Yeah, but look how it stayed with you all this time.
Yeah.
That's kind of interesting.
I mean, just stretch before you try it. You'll pull a muscle.
This movie has that same sense of fun, the same excessive violence. They throw in a ton of American actors into the mix this time. Halle Berry's in it, Channing Tatum, Jeff Bridges, among others. Some surprise cameos in it that are funny. Maybe too many cameos. Maybe too much stuff that they added trying to make it interesting that I think waters it down a tiny bit. But I still really enjoy this movie. Colin Firth is back in the movie. Taron Egerton, Mark Strong, the British originals, some of the British originals are all back. It's a kind of a spy spoof. If you cross James Bond and Austin Powers together, really is what you get here. I enjoyed this one, too. It's a Dean's List B, and Ben Stiller's got a new movie. It reminded me of a Woody Allen movie that is, you know, introspective and thoughtful, but it, you know, might have been a better, interesting idea than having to make you sit through a two-hour story of this. It's called Brad's Status, and it's how people are constantly comparing ourselves to our friends, our coworkers, our family's successes. How do we compare? How are we keeping up with the Joneses? Even comparing ourselves with our children's successes. So again, very introspective. Dean's List C on that one.
All right, buddy. Have a great weekend. Are you on Sunday?
I am on Sunday with full interviews with Jake Gyllenhaal, the real Billie Jean King, Emma Stone, and Steve Carell. So no A-listers at all this week.
No, nothing. Speaking of A-listers, thanks. Willie Geist from NBC here in a couple of minutes, and then A-lister John DeCoste plays the Match Game, all coming up on 720 WGN right after the big story, which is next. Live from 30 Rock, or somewhere where he wants to be, our friend Willie Geist from Morning Joe, and more importantly to us, Sunday Today, where he's going to talk to Biddy Kaling this week. But first, you know, I'm minding my own business yesterday. I'm sitting in my house. I'm looking at the new Golf Digest. And I'm looking at the new Golf Digest, and I'm flipping through, and it's the top 50 celebrity golfers in New York, and there's my friend Willie Geist.
Preposterous. You know, I did a little write-up for that issue, and I think in lieu of payment, they put me on the list of the best golfers in New York City, because I genuinely, this is not false humility, am horrible at golf. I don't know where they got the idea that I was good at golf, that I even play golf.
They complimented your swing.
I know. They said I had a good swing. I try to swing only in private, so no one has to be subjected to it. But, so I don't know where anybody saw my swing, but I like going out driving the cart with my son, knocking down a couple of cocktails, playing about four holes, and going home. That's my golf game.
The President's Cup is coming to New York, which is kind of the theme of the issue. I thought it was cool. That was cool.
Yeah, no, it was great. That's a fun issue.
All right, so Mindy Kaling. You sit down with Mindy Kaling in your series of A-list interviews that have been nothing but great from all facets of life. These are not just celebrities. These are interesting people, authors and movers and shakers and philanthropists, just great people. And Mindy Kaling, who I've never met, I'm hoping was nothing but fun.
She is. You know, you like when you sit down for an interview and the person is exactly who you'd hope they were, or the person you believe them to be by watching them through TV and another interview. She's just great. And she's final season of her show. And she's got a great story. You know, she's a hustler. She came up as a writer. She did an off Broadway show called Matt and Ben when she was 23 years old that, with along with one of her friends, imagined what the private friendship of Matt Damon and Ben Affleck would look like, except it was two 23-year-old women playing Matt and Ben, and she played Ben, and that got the attention of writers at The Office. She got a job hired as a writer there, became an actor on The Office, became an executive producer, and then got her own show. And she's just one of those powerhouse type of Hollywood women who, you know, she's got her hands on every aspect of the show. She runs the show. She acts in the show. She writes the show. And she's smart and funny and cool, and she announced to us, and you'll see some more in the interview tomorrow, that she is in fact pregnant, confirming all the rumors. So she's got a lot going on, that Mindy Kaling.
Willie, I thought she was so much younger. I mean, she just has that face. She looks like she's probably late 20s, I would put her at. And I also find it kind of cool that she's a writer, too.
Wait, how old is she?
She's 38.
She's not 30, that that's, yeah, 38.
That's
38,
not old at all. Yeah. I had her
and
peg.
Is this her first child?
It's her first child. Yeah. I mean, she's been working nonstop. I mean, she knew what she wanted to be. She was obsessed with Conan O'Brien when she was in high school. So she went and got herself in college an internship with Conan O'Brien, during which she said she didn't do much except stalk Conan O'Brien. She always knew she wanted to be a writer, and she's always been funny, and she's sort of like had that single-minded goal, and she's done it through going up through The Office and her own show. So it'll be fun to see what she does next. But she is not one of those people who just pops up on screen. She dreams up the story. She writes the story. She produces it. And then she acts in it. So she's great. She's everything you think she is.
It's Willie Geist. And Sunday Today, he sits down and he talks with Mindy Kaling. I don't know what you guys hit on Morning Joe this morning, but the president started tweeting again. And yeah. I was struck by the fact that he was almost presidential in his restraint with Kim Jong-un, but then he had to launch into the media and the Hillary obsession again. Did I miss anything?
Yeah, he went back to he called him a madman. He's in this sort of back and forth. We did talk about it a lot this morning, that when he was running, you know, the low energy Jeb and little Marco and all that, it was, you know, it was his way to sort of vaporize those guys. But a lot of people asked at the time, what happens when the stakes are different and you're insulting someone who has nuclear weapons? Well, here we are. He's on Twitter insulting somebody who has nuclear weapons, the rocket mad, the madman, all those things. So, you know, everybody we talked to who came on the show today said he did something good with these new sanctions, squeezing China's banks. That's the way to go.
Right.
And you don't need this
Absolutely.
Sort of volley of back and forth crap going across on Twitter when you're doing the right thing behind the scenes.
And I did not, and he also helped our vocabularies because the word dotard came up. I'd never heard the word before.
And I hadn't either.
It means old and senile. So now you have a new insult if you need it.
Yeah, and by the way, these world leaders clearly know precisely how to troll Donald
yep.
Trump. They know his sensitivities. Vladimir Putin knows you flatter Donald Trump. The Saudi Arabian leaders, when he went to the Middle East, knew he would like to see his own face projected on the side of his hotel, so they did that. And Kim Jong-un knows if you want to bait Donald Trump, you call him old, you call him senile, you say he's slipping, you say he's not strong, he's not powerful, and you'll get a response from Donald Trump, and he got one. He got one again this morning, and I suspect Donald Trump's not the kind of guy who's going to tone it down because people like you and me say it's probably a bad idea.
Right, and we're just about this far away from hashtag, I know you are, but what am I, between both of them.
It is. I mean, it's schoolyard stuff, but schoolyard stuff with nuclear weapons instead of a sandbox.
So I hope you have a great weekend. I love the Willie Geist interviews on Sunday Today. I hope everybody sees them. And if not, you can pick them up online as well and also get Willie the home game and play it at your house. Now go hit some balls, will you?
Yes, that swing that's so celebrated in the pages of Golf Digest.
Have a great weekend. Thanks, bud.
Okay, you too, guys. See ya.
We'll come back and play Match Game in just a second, Marin. And let me turn it over to your host, John DeCoste. Good morning, John.
Good morning.
Welcome back to the show.
Yeah, it's nice to be back. This is fun.
All right, so tell me how to play Match Game.
Real simple. The caller will, I will give them a phrase. They have to fill in the blank. And then you all have to fill in the blank as well. And they see how many they can match.
Most matches wins?
Correct.
We have fabulous prizes just for playing our game. Liz is on line one, and we're lining up a second caller right now as the lines have blowed up real good for Match Game. Shall we begin with Liz?
Let's do it. Let's do it with Liz.
Let's go, Liz, now. Go ahead, John.
Hello, Liz. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Where are you calling us from this morning?
Joliet.
Oh, very good. Very good.
Are you really excited she's in Joliet, or are you just doing the game show host where you're
That was just the game show host thing. Okay. So,
got it.
You know,
got
but
it.
Yeah, very good.
Excellent.
Okay. Are you ready? You know how to play, Liz?
A little bit. Can you refresh me a little bit?
No problem. What I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a phrase. You fill in the blank, and then we'll see how many of our celebrities you can match. All right?
Okay.
Here we go. Doc Most said that at Central DuPage Hospital, I watched an operation on a man who must have been a magician. They reached in to take his appendix and pulled out a blank.
A long scarf.
Wait, a long scarf.
Hold on one sec.
Her answer is a long scarf.
Long, she was quick with that.
Yeah, scarf. Well, you have to wait until the celebrities are celebrities are locked in here.
Long scarf. Doc Most said at the Central DuPage Hospital, I watched an operation on a man who must have been a magician. They reached in to take his appendix and pulled out, and Liz said a long scarf. So, Andrea, let's start with you. What your answer?
I put, for no rhyme or reason, a beating heart.
A beating heart.
Which every musician has access to.
Once again, you seem to be struggling with this game.
Liz, I'm already going to apologize, Liz. Here we go. Mary Sandberg, what is your answer?
My answer is a jelly bean.
A jelly bean. Okay. Okay.
Because I'm too busy still laughing about your answer.
Did you hear the word magician?
Yes, magician. Jelly bean?
Yeah, jelly bean. Very good.
Okay.
Mark Carmen, what is your answer?
Yeah, I think I might be a little bit off here, too. I went with a knee. Pull out a knee.
Have you people ever tied a reference to an answer in anything in your life?
Liz, this is not your fault at all.
But a long scarf is a magician answer.
Yes.
Yeah.
She's already come up with the best answer.
Mary Vanderbilt? That's
it. Yes. Mary Vanderbilt, what is your answer?
I also came up with the magician answer. A rabbit.
Yes. Rabbit was a good answer.
Yes.
Very good.
Yes.
And Steve also has rabbit.
There you go.
I'm sorry, Liz, you didn't match anybody.
No, both of our rabbits were wearing long scarves.
Yes, they were.
Good.
Sandberg, Carms, and Andrea's answers were so loony that she gets the 2 points.
Perfect.
All
good.
Right.
Very
all
good.
Right,
all right.
Wow. Hilarious. I love it.
A beating
so
heart.
Much fun, yeah.
I thought a knee made a lot of sense when I wrote it down for the record. Right there. I'm like, a knee. It's perfect.
Rita's on the phone. Hello, Rita.
Hi.
Oh, John, say hi to Rita.
I don't think I can.
I am so excited. Steve, your panel is a little weak.
I'm sorry.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable.
I had one answer from that one, but let's see what we have with this one.
All right, what's the question?
Okay. Well, that's good. Here's the question. I'm sorry, what is the name again? I apologize.
Rita.
It's Rita. Lovely
I'm sorry.
Rita.
Please forgive me, Rita. Mm-hmm. All right, Rita, you know how to play, correct?
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
Very good. Here we go. Kevin Powell was so dumb. The first time he went on a cruise, he thought the porthole was a blank.
Oh, yeah, that Kevin Paul.
Kevin
Don't
Powell
answer yet, Rita.
Was so dumb. The first time he went on a cruise, he thought the porthole was a blank.
The Rita? Potty? The
potty. I will take that. The potty. The potty porthole. That's good. That's
what
wonderful.
I don't think wonderful is a word I would have gone with there, but you know.
I know.
Can we start with Andrea again?
I think we should.
You know what? Rita is going to love me because I said, and I even drew a picture.
I love you anyway, Andrea.
Thank you, Rita. The toilet bowl.
Toilet bowl, yes. Yeah. Ding, 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 ding. Yes.
And I drew
very
a picture,
good.
Too.
Nice
very
comeback.
Good. That was Thanks. Beautiful. That was beautiful. Mark Carmen?
John, I went with the old diving outlet.
What? All right. Yes. You have
that
taken
now. That is now the worst answer in the history of Match Game. By the way, I'm including the Gene Rayburn years.
Okay. The diving outlet right out into the sea.
That's the dumbest thing I have ever heard in my life.
I can just envision Kevin floating away.
I want to redo the question, but I want to put Mark Carmen's name. Mark Carmen was so dumb. Stupid. Mary Sandberg, yes.
An eye.
An eye.
And what?
Eye.
Yes.
Why would it be an eye?
It's circle.
You guys want to revisit now?
God.
Who's the master at this game? Me and Rita.
That was adorable.
Andrea.
Circle.
Thank you, Rita.
That was so good.
Rita, you and I are going for months later.
Yeah. See, I was trying to cover you and think maybe you mean peephole. Like the porthole was a peephole. Oh, I'm in
Mary
pain.
Mary Vanderbilt.
I'm in pain.
Just in pain.
Yes. I'll save you. Well, I went with the porch and the Porta potty.
Potty.
Very good.
Yes.
Yeah. Two matches. There yes. Oh, and potty three. Oh,
Rita, you're a winner.
Rita, you're the winner. Yes.
Yes.
Ah, oh,
three potties. Three potties.
Yeah. Oh.
An eye and a diving outlet.
Oh, my God. Hold on. Yeah.
Diving outlet.
Mike, I asked you to check during the game. You've gone back through all the match games in the 70s. Have you found a dumber answer than diving outlet? Mike, no, he is not. Okay, no. Fine. All right. What has she won?
An Apt gift card and a Lou Malnati's pizza and a Chevy Dry Chicago mug.
Ooh. All right.
Oh, super.
And because we felt bad about Liz's experience, we gave her $12,000 in cash. All right, hold the line. We'll come back, get your news next at 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Music is a world within itself. The language we all understand. With an equal opportunity for all to sing, dance, and clap their hands. But just because a record has a groove, don't make it in the groove. But you can tell right away in Dr. A when the people start to move.
Stevie for your Friday. If you are on Transparent, the incredibly and rightfully well-awarded television series, you have two jobs at this point. One is show up on time, hit your marks, and act your ass off. The other is show up at award shows and collect more trophies. Our friend Amy Landecker, and of course we love her dad, but our friend Amy Landecker has had a great Hollywood career. Just seems to be getting more and more good stuff and then delivering. It's nice to have you back on the show. How are you?
First, what is up with the weather out there?
It's 147 degrees today.
I was like listening to that going, oh, my God.
Yeah.
Anyway.
The high is 147 today, but the humidity will be 300%. So we will all be liquefied by noon. So.
Oh, my God. Hi.
Hey, congrats on Transparent. I'm not kidding. You need a trophy room for all the stuff you guys are winning.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate. And yet, I will say, I bet a lot of your listeners still haven't heard of the show or watched the show. Like, I still feel like we have to keep getting the word out. There's just so much out there. There's so much content that, you know, I feel like it's unbelievable. You can win the Golden Globe and like a zillion Emmys and SAG Awards, and people will still go, "What show are you on?" It's like, oh no, we have to keep screaming it from the rooftop.
But it's
really
because
it's worth checking out.
Yeah, it's because of access, right? Because everybody assumes,
yeah.
Well, if I can find it on Amazon, I'll go find it on Amazon and stuff. But people don't think of this as a television platform until they learn that that's a television platform.
Yes, it takes a little time, and it also, I think, is the age of binging where everyone knows they can catch up,
yep.
You know, whenever they want, you know, and so it's sort of like, oh, it's on my list, you know, it's on my list, which I get, too. I love a good binge.
I'm actually
but, yeah, we are,
now.
Amazon's definitely a new sort of, I they might not like me saying this, but I feel like we're like the Showtime to HBO, like Netflix is
yeah.
kind of the HBO.
Yeah, I think that's
like
fair.
The second.
Yeah, no, I do think that's fair. But here's the thing. If you watch Transparent on Amazon, all of your Amazon deliveries come an hour sooner. I'm just saying. I'm just saying. That's true.
2 days for free. I mean, yeah. It's well worth it. You probably get more bang for your buck on Amazon Prime than any other. Like, who
no
else
kidding.
Is offering you free packages? I mean, let's be honest. So,
yeah, it's like yeah. Amazon Prime may be the best deal ever.
Exactly. It's a no-brainer.
And by the way, I'm including the Bed Bath & Beyond coupons.
Amy, I just started binging. I love it. I think you have such a strong cast, your character, Judith Light's character. And you know, what I found cool about it is that there's someone on the show that everybody can either identify with or relate to, even if it's the whole family dynamic where you guys are sitting
yeah.
around eating, you know, kind of stuffing food in your mouth, dropping food on the floor, and talking
You're
about
including
your day.
Jeffrey Tambor in this as well.
A little bit, but yeah. I'm thinking more Amy's character, Judith Light's character.
Well, I mean, that's sort of what's true about it is,
you know, people think, oh, it's about a trans person. I can't relate to that. It's not about a trans person. It's a trans person in an entire family. And even the trans person's issues, I think, are relatable in the sense of, like, you know, having secrets or feeling like maybe you're not 100% authentic in all areas of your life. So, but it's you know, the transness of Maura Pfefferman is just one element of a entire family that, I mean, I'm married and just, you know, but I'm also attracted to women and trying to deal with that. And then I have a brother who's like, you know, sleeping with every woman he meets. And then I have a sister who's totally lost and doesn't know what she's doing with her life. Like, you know, it's just a Tuesday, you know, for anybody.
Yeah, most of us have to wait till Thanksgiving for that conversation.
I told...
It's really good storytelling, right? It's a little addictive. It's not
medicine. God, yeah. Yeah, you're exactly right.
I told Steve your character truly is the most likable on the show, and I think the most relatable. You've kind of jumped into directing, too, now. Is that, how different is that from acting?
I never want to act again. I feel like it's the funnest thing I've ever done.
Is that right?
It was also under really great circumstances. Yeah, I got to direct a series of shorts for Funny or Die that are an offshoot of Transparent. They're called The Lost Sessions, Transparent, The Lost Sessions. And I had an idea, and I think what's so exciting about directing is, like, you know, as an actor, I'm always playing other people's ideas. And there was something about being able to come up with an idea. I wrote it, directed it, produced it. So it was sort of like I had this idea that of putting some of our amazing actors, who are all some of the funniest people I've ever met, in a purely comedic setting around the show, because the show is both drama and comedy, and I just wanted us to be silly and show everybody's, you know, incredible improv skills. I mean, there's a lot of improv in these pieces, and they're basically just every character goes to a life coaching session with the worst life coach that ever existed, Laura Milton Kaufberger, who's also from Chicago, Carrie Aisley. She's
Chicagoan. Yeah, right.
And she's amazing. And so everyone showed up, Katherine Hahn, Jeffrey Tambor, Judith Light. Everybody came in and did these shorts for me. And it was just an extraordinary experience. And I could have gone into session. They had me in hair and makeup. I think I went in once with Tig and never went back. I was like, I don't want to be on camera. I just want to direct these. So,
isn't directing a lot of work, or am I wrong?
Yeah, but you know what? It's a lot of work, but it's also, you realize that you're basically like a conductor of an orchestra. Like, you have, if you have amazing musicians, which is who I had, Emmy nominated, like DP, Emmy nominated costumer, all these actors, like, basically you're orchestrating it. So it's a really power, like, fun. It gives you so much energy that you don't realize how hard you've worked until the day is done. And then literally, I think I fell asleep on the first day at 8 o'clock. Like, I went home and I felt like I just passed out, but I was on such a high the whole time.
It's cool.
Because you're so engaged that, and in such a thrilling way. I think particularly too, comedy is, I've done a lot of theater in Chicago that was like really dark and sad. That's really draining. But like when you are working in comedy, that laughter is very energizing.
Without a doubt. Fourth season of Transparent coming on Amazon. And whether you are acting in it or directing, you're getting a bunch of offers, and you're also at a point in your career, too, where there seems to be a lot of interest in your love life. And it's great for me because I don't have to call you and find out who you're dating. I just wait for TMZ to tell me.
Yeah, I'm very lucky. I met my boyfriend, Bradley Whitford, on
Twitter. Oh, what's he ever done?
Yeah, I know. He's a hack.
He's such a great actor.
Yeah, he also looks, oh God, and I'm spacing his name, so I'm a bad Chicagoan, but just for trivia, the manager of the Cubs is his doppelganger. Although that's also my dad's doppelganger, so it's a little bit creepy. So I guess that means
I'm sure you're working all that out in therapy.
Yeah, I'm working it all out.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been very, very lucky. I'll just say that.
You're on a very fun ride. And by the way, you know how much I love your dad, but we all do. But how about your Hall of Fame dad?
His Hall of Fame, yeah. Right? I was like, I gotta give a shout out. It's so exciting. We did all these Emmy parties this year, and he came out as my date because Bradley was out of town, and I just loved celebrating him. You know, there was an actor from The Office, an actor from Veep, people freaking out who were from Chicago, couldn't believe they were meeting him. It was really fun. And you know, to be able to tell everybody he's going to be in the Hall of Fame, it's just exciting. I know it's, you know, that stuff supposedly doesn't matter, and yet at the same time, it feels
incredibly validating, and I'm really proud of him.
I've told this story many times, but when I was coming up, long before I was coming up, this is the late 70s, mid to late 70s, when Landecker was the absolute king, right? And I'm sitting in upstate New York doing my homework, listening to WLS through the static just so I can hear Landecker at night and hear Boogie Check and hear all that. The guy's just one of my idols. So fast forward, 15 years later, maybe 10 years later, I'm in Chicago and I'm talking to an agent, and he was working with this agent at that point, and he comes out from behind a door, and I'm going, holy crap, that's John Records Landecker. And, and I'm getting nervous around people, and I was just like a little schoolgirl, and he was really nice to me, and I was going, oh, God, don't be busting me. Don't be playing me. Just be this guy. And he's been that guy every step of the way. Everybody that ever has met your dad knows it. He's one of the nicest guys there is, and without question, he is the best disc jockey ever, period.
Oh, that's so sweet. I'm going to take that audio clip and make it
Well, he knows I feel that way, but I mean, people need to hear that too.
No, he doesn't. My dad is so self-deprecating and humble.
Yeah.
He's always in shock that anything's ever happening. I'm like, I've grown up my whole life, people asking if I'm related and, saying he's a legend, and he can't take it in, but maybe this will finally
got Steve Cochran's affirmation.
Maybe you, Steve, calling him the best disc jockey today. That
period. Period.
Amy, we're done.
You, your dad, your whole family, so down to earth. I know you started doing voiceovers and commercial acting and now directing. I just want to know what advice you'd have for young women entering this business.
I would say especially if you're entering entertainment, we're in a time where you gotta try a bunch of different things. I think people like the Lena Dunhams and even Jill Soloway's, that you create content is going to be how you're going to really find your way. You can't this has been a door opening for me. I used to just act and I couldn't get a big agent. I couldn't get a big break. And it was actually when I wrote a script and sold it that I finally got a big agent, because they want to know that you can do a lot of different things. And I was afraid to try things. And I think women in general, sometimes we have a barrier thinking, oh, it's going to be so hard and I don't know how to direct. There are 4% of films are made by female directors. The numbers are just insane.
It's amazing.
And it's just fear. I jumped in. I was obviously lucky to not have a high stakes. It was if I failed, no one would really know. But I had to overcome my terror of I don't know what I'm doing. And Jill Soloway, our creator, is really big on telling women, you do know more than you think you do.
That's great.
Just try it. Yeah.
By the way, Funny or Die, for those that don't know, Will Ferrell, Adam McKay, and Chris Hinchey's production company website. Oh, listen. Where can you go on the web where 90% of the content will make you laugh?
You will just, the night goes away.
Yeah, it's tremendous. John DeCoste, last word from you.
Real quick, Jeffrey Tambor, so have you seen a change in him? And I'm not trying to be funny with that, but he comes dressed this way. Do you see him different than he was when he started this show?
You mean, has he grown as a person or a character?
No, but is he more feminine side? Does he, how's he doing this? Or,
you mean in his real life?
Yeah, pretty much. He just shows up and it's work time?
No, I think he goes through quite a transformation when he becomes Maura. There's a lot that he's in hair and makeup more than probably anyone else on the show.
Sure.
There's something about a really brilliant actor, and he's one of them, one of the greatest. I really feel that.
I agree.
Where that process transforms him. What's always shocking is when he comes out of Maura and he's Jeffrey again. And I'm like, and he's super masculine in his real life. And he's such a guy. And then when he's Maura, he's a completely different human being. And a lot of that, and he'll say this often, is, the hair and makeup team, the wardrobe. He's got underneath, he's wearing, Spanx. He's got nails done, a wig done, and he also takes it extremely seriously. He has consulted. We have, trans women on set who he acts with. Alexander Billings, who's like a national treasure of Chicago theater, is on the show. She's trans. She's been openly trans for 30 years, and she, he will ask for advice. He takes it really seriously, and Yeah, so I think that's why people respond so intensely to the performance. I mean, it's not a caricature. It's just a human being, and he's just remarkable.
He's tremendous.
I mean, there's very few people who could give you like Oscar quality acting and make you laugh so hard you're going to pee in your pants.
I'll give you a show you should find if you love Tambor. Jeffrey Tambor and John Lithgow did a show, I think it was for NBC, called 20 Good Years. And the premise was, I got two guys at 60. We got 20 good years left. Let's live it up. It didn't last, but I love the premise.
I love those two guys. I got to play John Lithgow's wife and Beatrice at dinner, and he told me about that show. He said, you know, I know Jeffrey, and I need to find it. It sounds kind of like an amazing, those two together. And we also talked about the fact that John was sort of the original, you know, trans person in World According to Garp.
He was great at the time.
Yeah, but yeah.
Maybe, let's be honest. Maybe he's enjoying the clothing a little too much, right? Let's go back. Yeah. By the way, I've been in drag
not
a couple.
The heels, though. I'll tell you, not the shoes.
Right? Amen, sister.
About that.
I've been in drag a couple of times, and I don't know. I feel like I can be honest with you guys. I am not a pretty girl. I'm going to be honest with you.
Well, neither was my boyfriend on Transparent. I mean, everyone's like, I'm like, trust me, we didn't start dating the first year when he was on Transparent. I wasn't exactly attracted.
Yeah. Well, tell Bradley how much we love him as well, but you'll probably talk to Dad before we will. And thanks for coming on, and congratulations on Transparent and all the success.
Listening. If I know my dad, he's probably listening.
Well, I hope so. And congrats. I mean, nothing but success.
Thank you.
All the best. Amy Landecker.
Thanks for having me.
All over social media, and this is her hometown and always will be. Come back with a big story next. And then we're going to get a chance to talk to Elizabeth Smart. Yes, that Elizabeth Smart here in a few minutes. And looking forward to that, too, on 720 WGN. Back live in the Allstate Showcase Studio, Steve Cochran, 944 now. Elizabeth Smart's going to speak at Carthage College tonight, along with Fight to End Exploitation. This is the Evening of Awareness. Starts 7 o'clock tonight. I assume it's sold out. If it's not, it should be. You can get your tickets immediately and go. And I would encourage you to support whatever Elizabeth Smart does. For those of you who go, remember the name, is this that Elizabeth Smart? Yeah, that's the one. In June 5th of 2002, she's 14. She's kidnapped, thankfully rescued 9 months later after going through a nightmare beyond nightmares, as her family did as well. And certainly could have chosen a quiet life to try to live her life, figure things out and move on, and yet continues to go out there and talk to folks, parents and kids too, about how to be aware and how to protect yourself. And I'm very pleased to have you on the program. And Elizabeth?
Yes.
I'm very pleased to have you on the program, and I salute your work.
Well, thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
So let's start with this evening tonight, the Evening of Awareness. The benefit you hope people will get out of this is specifically what?
It's to help raise awareness for the group called Fight and Exploitation, and their purpose is to stop human trafficking in Wisconsin.
Now, we're not even remotely aware of how big a deal this is, right, in the country. I mean, we think, well, this is America. By the way, who's your little squirt with you there?
Sorry, that's my 5-month-old baby in the background.
You have no reason to apologize. We love hearing that. But human trafficking is a much bigger problem than we're even aware of, right?
It's huge. What people don't realize is that we think slavery is over and done with, but actually slavery is a bigger issue today than it ever has been before. There's over 2 million people in slavery today, many of those being sex slaves.
Sure. Sure. And we need to be aware of it to be able to. You can't fix a problem unless you accept that you have a problem. And that's part of the reason to have this awareness. So we can urge not just everybody to be aware, but lawmakers to support it and private the folks to support it as well, because it takes funding to beat back crime.
It absolutely does. And whenever we think, well, that doesn't happen in my neighborhood. I live in a nice neighborhood. I live in a safe neighborhood. Well, I really did live in a nice neighborhood, and I really did live in a safe neighborhood, and I lived in a safe home, and I was kidnapped out of my bed in the middle of the night. I mean, it happens. It happens everywhere. Crime doesn't respect boundaries. It happens. And so thinking it doesn't happen in your neighborhood, that's only allowing it to continue on.
Elizabeth, you've been so courageous and a champion, really, for speaking on this cause. What do we need to know? Is it if we see something, say something, even if we just think it might be something minor?
Absolutely. And I think, first of all, we should be starting in our own homes with our children, talking to them. I think there are three things that every parent should be telling their children all the time. The first one is that you love your child unconditionally. And that kind of sounds like a no-brainer, but making sure that they realize that they're loved and that there are no strings attached to that, making sure that they know what unconditionally means is so important. Knowing that my parents loved me unconditionally is what got me through my 9 months of being kidnapped. Second, and these are in no specific order, but second is that nobody has the right to hurt your children and or your child or you. It doesn't matter who it is. It doesn't matter if it's a family member. It doesn't matter if it's a community leader, a religious leader, a friend, a teacher. It does not matter who. Nobody has that right to hurt them. And thirdly, if someone is hurting them, then they need to tell. If they feel scared or uncomfortable, they need to tell. And preferably that person is you. And it doesn't matter if you need to tell them because so many victims are threatened, and that's why they don't speak out. They're told that they'll go after their family or they'll go after their parents or someone that they love, and they think that they're protecting their family by not saying anything. But when someone threatens you or tells you not to tell your parents or tells you not to tell anyone to keep it a secret, that is the biggest red flag, and you absolutely do need to tell someone.
Talking to Elizabeth Smart, you've touched on what I can consider to be the most, I don't know, aggravating, I guess would be the word. And there are some well-meaning folks and some not so well-meaning who always ask the same question. You're kidnapped. Why don't you run? When you're a teenage girl and you're being held by these two monsters and being told the things you were told and having the things done that happened to you, running's not an option, is it?
For me, it wasn't. I actually did try on several occasions, but running, I had been so abused for so long, and no one had ever stood in their way. No one had ever stopped them. No one had ever been there to protect me. Any time that they said they were going to do something, they always did. They always followed through. So when they said that they would kill me or they'd kill my family if I ever ran, if I ever did anything they didn't want me to do, that was an incredibly real threat. So I not only felt like I was protecting myself, but I felt like I was protecting my family as well. And many of these other children who are kidnapped or who are trafficked, and they find themselves in the same situation. And what's worse is that many times they don't even have anywhere to run to. And so there's nothing that they can do about it. A lot of times children who run away and are picked up to be trafficked, they ran away because they were being abused in their home
right.
to begin with.
Right.
And so what alternative is there for them out there?
And unconditional love is the key. You know, and in places where kids don't have it, making sure they know that they have an outlet to find it. You know, I'm a proponent of the National Runaway Switchboard because it's folks who have gone through it. There are resources everywhere. Hospitals. You run into a hospital. If you're a kid that's being abused at home, do it. But to go back to Andrea's question of a few moments ago, Elizabeth, when you have that little trigger go off, when you think, well, that seems odd. That's more than a kid just upset at Kmart or
right.
Walmart. There's something funky about that relationship. Speak out.
Absolutely. Just pick up the phone and call the police. I mean, what is the worst thing that can happen?
Right.
Well, to you, maybe you're wrong and you're embarrassed for half a second.
So what?
But
right.
Really, the worst thing is that that child is in danger and that they are being abused. And really, that worst thing, that's the best thing, because then they can be rescued, they can be taken away, and hopefully placed somewhere where they can be safe, where they can receive the help that they need, and they're helped to move on with their lives and put this all behind them.
Elizabeth, talk a little bit about your foundation, too. It not only helps assist victims of sex crimes put away their predators, but overcome mental health issues and provides counseling, too, which is so important.
So at the Elizabeth Smart Foundation, we do a few things. We are huge proponents of prevention education. I mean, the earlier that we can get to children and teach them and help them become aware, the less vulnerable they are. And so we stress education everywhere we go. We also are working on putting together forums on topics like rape, because I had the opportunity a couple of years ago to interview two young women, and they actually had both gone to college, both graduated college, and it took them years after the fact to find out what had happened to them was rape. They didn't know what rape was. They thought that it happened by strangers in dark hallways, and what had happened to them was they had been groomed and groomed and groomed by boyfriends and then had been terribly abused by them and raped by them. And so it sounds almost crazy to think that, you know, there are college girls today that don't have a real understanding of what rape is, but we are trying to explain it to them. We're trying to open it up, to have that conversation, to, I don't know, remove the all question and ambiguity. And, wow, I can't even speak this morning.
Yeah, no, the ambiguity. Well, look, you got a lot going on there. You got a lot going on. You have that adorable five-month-old. You're talking to us, so give yourself a break. You're doing fine. By the way, the website for that is ElizabethSmartFoundation.org. And, again, if you're in Carthage tonight or can get there, we hope you will. We hope you already have tickets. But it's the Fight to End Exploitation as your co-presenters for the Evening of Awareness tonight. And this goes on, you know, events around the country. And if you go to the Elizabeth Smart Foundation, you can keep up with what's happening. We're going to let you go on this, but I want people to know that those two monsters are in jail. And I'm not going to talk about their names. They don't deserve a second of notoriety in any way, shape, or form. But people will want to know how you're doing. You got that beautiful baby. What else is happening with your family?
Well, I have a 2.5-year-old at home. She's with my husband. And life's great. Life's really wonderful. I'm really blessed.
Yeah, and your family, your extended family does well?
Yeah, everyone's doing well and happy and moving forward.
Well, one day at a time. And again, you are an amazingly courageous woman, and God bless you, and God bless those kiddos, too.
Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate you being on.
Thanks, Elizabeth. What a fantastic story. She's a great speaker, too.
There's Superwoman.
Yeah.
Right there.
Yep.
14 years old. Amazing story. And by the way, juggling the five-month-old while she does the interview.
Yeah.
Huh?
That's
how about that?
Impressive.
Yeah.
We'll come back, Bill and Wendy, on the way on 720 WGN.